Soccer Talk
Pod.
Yes, the pod that just keeps on giving. And we are giving to you after yet another international break with the first ever World Soccer Talk Pod preview show of the Barclays Premier League. And it's brought to you by Draft11.com. And I'll tell you all about Draft11.com in just a short moment. But first, the panel. The knowledge is just oozing this evening. I mean, oh, I can feel it just washing over me. It's the one, the only stat man, David Mossy, who's taken a break from the Euro slums to give us his opinion on the Barclays Premier League. Mossy, so glad you could get away from the Death Star. How are you?
Doing well. It's been very exciting the past few days, but I'm also excited to be here. And my Twitter is at StatmanMossy, M-O-S-S-E. Can hit me up at any time.
Yes, I heard the entire Fox broadcast team was on pins and needles as Germany floundered against Gibraltar. Coming from up north, and I'm not talking about Newcastle, it's Nate Abrea. Nate, how's lovely Northern California treating you?
Well, I've always said that the geographical parallels of England to California, I am essentially in the Californian equivalent of Newcastle or Sunderland up here in Redding, California. NorCal is treating me oh so kindly. Find me on Twitter, at DarthNader99. And my beloved Reds and my beloved Brendan Rodgers, they didn't drop any points in the last week. How about that?
Yeah, fantastic. And then, of course, we got Robin Burt. The last time we had Robin Burt on the show, he sort of disappeared. And it was something about Chardonnay and his wife's knickers. Have you actually managed to take the wife's knickers off and find the Chardonnay, Bertie?
Steady. I've recovered from Chardonnay gate. No, it's good. It's all good. But I'm definitely a happier man today with England beating the Jocks 3-1. Fantastic result.
Always and very nice to take care of the sweaty socks.
And I can be found at BertieBoy11.
And don't forget, you can also find me at Nick Webster. And if you really like the show, you can subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And of course, don't forget the hashtag WSTPod, and we can be found at World Soccer Talk. So this is our first ever BPL preview show, so let's drive straight into it. Chelsea, the league leaders, the imperious Chelsea, the unbeatable Chelsea, the machine-like Chelsea, the Death Star, going up against West Brom. This would have been a great fixture last year had Steve Clarke still been in charge. But Steve Clarke has gone to the, what do we call it, the mafia way of sleeping with the fish. So Chelsea will put their unbeaten record on the line against the Baggies, who have been much improved lately. But to be honest with you, who can see anything other than yet another 3 points for the Blues, David Mossy?
And to put a little bit of a historical perspective on this Chelsea start, the season they set the Premier League record for points was 2004-2005. Mourinho's first season, in fact, 95 points. They had 26 through 11 games that season. They have 29 this season. Although I should say the following season they had 31 through 11 games, finished with 91. So that's, to me, what they're shooting for now. I mean, they're going to win the league this season without question, and now it's about how many records can they set. The record for margin of victory is 18 by United, 99-2000. I think that's in sight as well. Can they go unbeaten the whole season, pull an Arsenal Invincibles? And I certainly think they keep it going here. Mourinho got his wish. He whined enough. Cost and Fabregas were left off the Spain squad, so they should be nice and rested and ready to hammer West Brom.
Well, let's talk about this invincible team back in 2004, was it? 2002?
2004?
03-04.
Oh,
we're talking Arsenal.
So Mourinho has been a little coy on the subject when asked if he was going to be in charge of Invincible Mark II. Nate, what do you think? I mean, when you look at what Chelsea's done, who they've played all the big boys, they've looked very, very comfortable. And it doesn't seem to me that there is anybody who can put a dent in their armor.
Yeah, but I think someone is going to at some point. We're in mid-November right now, and between now and May, they are going to slip up somewhere and lose a match by a solitary goal. I'm not going to say when it's going to be. I definitely don't think it's going to be this weekend.
Oh, you're so brave, Nate.
Well, no, I just listened to Mourinho himself talk, and I know he's such a snarky, just, I mean, gets under your skin even when he's being polite. But last week or a couple weeks ago when he said, we're the champions of the autumn, and I loved that quote. Everyone has taken it. Here's a nice little cliche for you, Bertie. One match at a time, because really, Chelsea, I do not see them going undefeated. I see them losing at least once this year. You go back with this matchup. I love looking back to the last time we had this exact fixture. It was November of 2013. It was a little over a year ago when West Brom tied Chelsea 2-2 at Stamford Bridge and actually led 2-1 through goals from, I think it was Shane Long and Owen and Stéphane Sessegnon. And it was actually Eden Hazard penalty in the 96th minute of that game to steal a point at home against West Brom. So, I mean, if the Baggies are to look for inspiration, they need look no further than themselves about 1 year ago. I think Chelsea gets out of this winning 2-0. I think the goals are going to come relatively late, though. I think the Baggies are going to be very strong. I think Foster's going to make some great saves. I see Chelsea winning 2-0, first goal coming in 75th minute.
Well, to be fair, that was probably the result that cost Steve Clark his job as well, because that was blatant daylight robbery, if I recall. Should never have been a penalty.
Oh, yeah.
Any chance that Cahill and Terry will be upset by the Mourinho forward? 7 goals for the Baggies this year, Bertie? Or are they have too much experience for the youngster?
Yeah, no, they got plenty of experience. I mean, I'm not worried about Chelsea moving forward in the next few games. You know, I mean, they got some easy games coming up too against Sunderland, Spurs, Newcastle, Hull and Stoke. I think this is going to be a trickier game because, you know, you've had the international break. You've had players, all of the Chelsea players have been playing for their countries. And
Bar Costa and Fabregas, the two most dangerous players in the Premier League.
Yeah, but you can't say that for West Brom. I mean, there's probably just a handful of their players. I mean, Mourinho didn't even play today. So I actually think this will be a much closer game than Nate thinks it will be, but with the likes of, yeah, I mean, you know, Barry,
how much closer can it get? I mean, 75th minute, 0-0.
Well, let's just put some realism to this, and by realism I mean this is what the bookies say. All right, if you put £5 on Chelsea, you're going to get £1 back should the Blues win. West Brom, meanwhile, a very tasty 12-1. If you put £1 on West Brom, you're going to get £12 back. So the bookies give West Brom and no hope and
yeah,
Bob
that
hope.
Doesn't mean anything. That doesn't mean anything. You know, I mean,
oh, that doesn't mean anything. Oh, so all these temples that are built in Las Vegas mean absolutely nothing.
Okay, I'm going for it. I'm going for a prediction on this one. 1-1. That's what I
Ooh!
Think.
Oh, and you would get 11-2. Nate, what's your score?
I'm still sticking with 2-0 to Chelsea, but I think it's going to stay close late. I think it's going to be 0-0 into the 75th minute. I'm saying Hazard gets the first goal. I don't know who gets the second, but I'm saying Chelsea 2-0, both of them coming late second half.
And listeners, we will be revisiting these scorelines on Sunday's edition of the World Soccer Talk Pod, so make sure you stick around for that. Statman, your prediction, please.
Oh, very quickly on the Invincibles topic, they've also had a very easy Champions League group, which has given them the luxury to rotate in that competition, always put out his best team in the Premier League. Come the spring, that's going to change. They're going to eventually run into the Bayerns, Real Madrids, Barcelona. So I agree with Nate. He'll prioritize that competition. They'll get picked off somewhere in the league. But they're certainly not going to lose this weekend. I'm going to go 2-0 Costa and Hazard.
Oh, you guys, you boys are just so completely conservative. I mean, do you know anything about football? Chelsea take West Brom to the woodshed. They take down the trousers and they give them a raw spanking to the tune of 4. Everton versus West Ham. I know a certain Bertie boy's got an interest in this one, and obviously Nate with his pseudo love affair of the Toffees. Everton playing quite well recently, definitely the bookies' favourite. West Ham, are they off the boil? Not quite sure. Andy Carroll back in the team. And we'll have to start with Bertie because obviously we missed his warblings about the divine ponytail. Came back in for the last couple of minutes, had two great chances to score. Would you be upset if Sam Allardyce started playing Andy Carroll, which would then mean West Ham would start playing a different style of football, even if Andy Carroll started scoring goals?
No, I don't think so, because I think, you know, what's going to happen here is you've got, you know, Jenkinson on one side you know, who's pinging that ball in. Carroll didn't get that kind of service the last season. And I mean, he was injured for most of last season, but it's okay to mix it up. And I think against Everton, I think it is worth mixing it up, especially with those two big central defenders. Now, I think this is going to be a very interesting game. Everton, I don't think, are actually on a rich vein of form right now.
Well, I would hate to disagree with you, but they are unbeaten in six.
Yeah, but I don't think they've actually been... Well, okay, how many of those six are wins?
Stat.
Three wins, three draws.
Okay, all right, okay. That's not the point. no, I think... love you, Stat. I think this is going to be a good game, but I actually, unfortunately, I do think that Everton are probably going to squeeze this one. But you know, in retrospect, it could also be a draw.
Well, why don't you sit on the bloody fence a little bit harder? I can't wait to hear your prediction. Nate Aburea, I mean, you're the only Liverpool fan I know that's got more than a soft spot for the Toffees. In fact, I would say you have kind of a chubby spot for Everton. Where do you see this one going? Because, you know, you and I have both been very harsh on Tim Howard recently. He didn't play in the internationals, having retired for a supposed year. Is this going to make a difference to Howard's performance, and will it impact Everton overall?
I think so, absolutely. I think the fact of, I mean, we joke so much about him putting down the commentary microphone, but when you also take into consideration of him focusing everything of I live on Merseyside and I live and breathe Everton Football Club, and these fans love me. They chant USA when I make big saves. I've been here for damn near a decade. I've got tenure in this league like very few keepers, quite frankly, ever have had in the modern history of the Premier League. So I think that makes a big psychological difference for a guy like Timmy. But going back to these two teams, this is a huge statement game for both of these squads. And I love that, you know, we're talking about this run of form for Everton. They had those two wins, 6 points, where you needed to get six, where it was against Burnley and Villa. They got those. We were heralding Martinez. We're saying, hey, way to get them when you need to get them. They followed that with two real lackluster draws, including the last one on the road to Sunderland, where I felt they were very lucky to escape on that Leighton Baines penalty and actually get a point from Sunderland. West Ham, two straight draws as well. One of them a 2-2 against Stoke. The other one a real lackluster 0-0 against Villa. And you take this comparison a step further. The last loss for both of these teams, they were 2-1 defeats at Manchester United. I mean, it's so strange, the parallels between these two clubs right now. And obviously West Ham are, you know, there's no parallel as far as the table goes. And I call me a fence rider on here, but I see this as a 2-2 draw. And I mean an enthralling 2-2 draw, where there's going to be a red card, there's going to be a cracking goal. I see Samuel Eto'o getting one for Everton. I'm calling 2-2 between the Hammers and the Toffees at Goodison.
Yeah, the only crack going on is the stuff in your room. Stat, put a bow on this one, please, with a prediction.
I think the player Carroll might link up with well is Cresswell, that left back. He puts in some nice crosses. Yeah. But I hope they don't force Carroll into the lineup, because I love the way they've played with Sacco and Valencia and Downing up there. More expansive football than we've ever seen from Allardyce. But I actually agree with Bertie. I know unbeaten in six, but I don't think Everton have fully gotten on track in the league yet. They've saved their best for the Europa League this season. So, I think West Ham go in there and get a point.
Bertie, what's your scoreline?
I think it's probably going to be a draw. I'd be happy with a draw.
So we have three draws from you Muppets?
Yeah, it sounds really boring, but I think a draw is probably a fair result for either team right now.
I'm going to go for a nice home banker, Everton 2-0.
Ooh.
Next, on the docket, Manchester City versus Swansea. And if you don't have Sergio Aguero in your fantasy team, are you on drugs, Bertie?
I think you probably are on drugs if you don't have him there. But the biggest problem for Man City right now is probably he's the only player that's really firing. I mean, you know, Torre seems to have some sort of dip in form. Silva is hurt, I believe, still. You know, Dzeko is struggling to find the goals. So you've got to be relying on Aguero for most of what they're doing and most of what they're going forward. But I think this is a nice game. This is a nicely, positioned game, with Swansea in fifth on 18 points, only 3 points behind Man City. I think this could be quite an attractive game. It's good for Swansea because Wayne So Wayne Routledge and Nathan Dyer are both back. And it looks like Boney is probably going to be signing some sort of long-term deal for Swansea as well. So I think this will be an entertaining game.
Entertaining, I'll give you that. But, I mean, who can't see anything other than a Man City victory? I mean, this is a team that is absolutely on its hands and knees right now. They need a win desperately. Well, the bookies make Swansea rank outsiders. I mean, if City do not win this game, I'm going to put it out there right now. Pellegrini could get sacked.
I doubt that very much. You know, Man City's record, okay, look at their last six games. They've won four, lost one, and drawn one. And people are already just getting hysterical about, you know, their performances right now. But this is very typical of the beginning of any type of season. So I think they're doing just fine. The unfortunate thing is they're well off the pace behind Chelsea right now. But it only takes a couple of slip-ups by Chelsea, and before you know it, you know, they've narrowed the gap down to two.
Statman, I need you to jump in and just, like, really embarrass Bertie, because I don't know where he's getting his four wins from six games. He's definitely been on the Chardonnay, and if four? I'm not mistaken, he may even have the wife's knickers wrapped around his neck right now.
Steady.
Well, no, you know, City actually have two more points this season than they had last season through 11 matches. But I don't know.
One win in their last six.
Yeah, it feels different. I mean, this feels like two seasons ago with Mancini where they really struggled. Mancini, by the way, back at Inter, makes his debut this upcoming weekend in the Milan derby.
Do you ever miss a Serie A reference ever? I mean, it's seamless.
I am one of the 20 non-Italians in the world who still cares about Serie A. But no, on this match, I mean, an interesting stat. Swansea hasn't won away to City in the league since 1951, Nick. And maybe a little bit later you can tell us about that match. And they haven't scored a goal in the Premier League there in three visits. So this is a rough place for them. But this is not your grandfather, Swansea. I'm a big fan of this team, as everybody knows. I think they go in there and play them very tough. But I do see City pulling out a victory on like a 90th minute Aguero goal. I see a 2-1 Man City win.
This is a streaky Swansea team. I mean, we're talking about 7 points in the last three. And the way they ride roller coasters, it blows me away that they're in fifth place, level on 18, with West Ham 3 points back of City. Because this team rides roller coasters. And I have not seen a streakier side in all of England this year than the Swans. And 7 points in their last three, they've got Mo on their side, but it all comes down tactically and with the football itself. Let's put aside all the managers, the stadium. Let's just focus on what's going on in between the lines. And it comes down to which Yaya Toure shows up for this Man City team. And I don't think enough people are really hammering that home. I mean, is which Yaya Toure shows up? Is it going to be the beast mode grinder midfielder with the tenacity of Vinnie Jones and the distribution of Ronaldinho when he's on his day? I mean, he's one of the most sublime, well-rounded footballers I think that the world has seen in the last 5 to 10 years. Or is he the 7-year-old whining about a birthday cake that shows up? Because when he has those off matches, and you actually, of all people, have hammered this home, Nick, when he has those off matches, they are dismal. They are such massive drop-offs. There is no gray area for Yaya Toure in the year 2014. I think this is going to be one of those days where we see the real Yaya Toure show up. I think Toure gets a goal and an assist, and City rout the Swans 4-1.
I go for the big monster win as well. But anytime you start talking about points, Nate, I keep on thinking you're going to say Liverpool currently in 11th. Only 4 points out of a Champions League spot.
Shut up.
Okay. I want to talk to you about something very special. I tried to get it out of Bertie, but he just didn't take the hint about the Premier League and previewing matches and fantasy soccer. Now, I know you and your mates probably get hyped up about the Fantasy Premier League every August. But you know what? If you're like me, you end up petering out by this time of year because you forget to change your lineup. You have a rascal of a weekend. You're playing against millions of people who are far better than you. Well, guess what? I've found a brilliant game for you. And I mentioned it at the top of the show. It's a brand new fantasy football game. It's called Draft 11. And go to draft11.com. It's a daily fantasy sports game. You can create a team and play in a game that lasts as long as one day or a weekend. And this is the best part about it. I know you three are going to love it. You can win cash money. That's right. Real cash money. I'm not talking about pretend money. I'm not talking about points. I'm talking about the real filthy lucre. And it's completely legal to play if you live in the US. It's free to register, and I've got a special offer. And I know you three boys have been waiting for it, so I'll just make you wait a minute longer. It's a special offer for World Soccer Talk podcast listeners, which I know you three are. And you can compete in this weekend's Premier League, and you can play against me, Nick Webster, and the gaffer. That's right, gaffer himself, the man who runs this fine website, World Soccer Talk, the gaffer, a.k.a. Christopher Harris, and even Kartik Karishnaya. Now, this is the special thing. The listener who finishes with the three top scores will receive a cash prize. It's completely free to enter. That's the best part. Go to draft11.com. I'll repeat that again, draft11.com. And I'll even say it with an American accent. Draft11.com.
Hambone.
Hambone. Draft. Can you say draft, please, Nate?
Draft.
Draft. Draft11.com. Between now and Friday night, register for free and enter the game labeled World Soccer Talk Contest. Again, draft11.com. Sign up today. It's a great game, and you can win money. And that's what it's all about at the end of the day, right? Money, if you're in the Premier League?
Nothing else.
Now, talking of money, two teams that would really be suffocating without it if they got relegated would be Leicester and Sunderland. How is that for a segue? Oh, woo! The Foxes against the Black Cats. I'll throw this one to you, Nate Aburrea. Leicester, who were sensational beating Manchester United, have completely forgotten how to play. Sunderland seem to slowly be trying to find some respectability after that complete and utter snowman Southampton put on them.
You know, I know you give me so much grief about these point observations, but I'm going to give one for Sunderland that might make you cringe right now. It was hysterical, the level after that 8-0 defeat at Southampton, and then actually the following week, which was only a 2-0 loss at home to Arsenal, but which involved some of the most just comical defending from the likes of Wes Brown, and it just, Sunderland were the laughing stock, not only of England, I mean, they were the laughing stock of world football for a solid 14-day spell. Okay, in their last six matches, they have 8 points. I know that's not great, but 8 points in the last six matches, two of those six matches were the 8-0 defeat and the 2-0 comic fest at home to Arsenal. So with all of that, despite all the comical displays and just the absolute jokes that they have put forth for everybody to observe, I can't believe that they're where they're at right now. And I think Gus has got them playing maybe with a little bit more confidence. Listen to this point total in the last six matches for Leicester City, and it has a great little cherry on top of it. 1 point in their last six matches. You know where that 1 point came from? It was a 2-2 draw at home to Burnley. I mean, Leicester are going down so fast. And I know I said this way back on the first pod that we recorded back in August, and I said I saw Leicester finishing in 17th place. I'd love to stick to that. But my God, it's going to be a fun relegation fight this year. I see Sunderland winning this one 2-1 at Leicester, and it's going to be a real, real fight for the Foxes throughout this entire season. In 17th place, as we said back in August, will be a heaven send. And people were getting so carried away after that Man United result. And I go back to the tactical guru that is Robin Burt, who explained that when you don't press up too high against a team like that, they can't beat you on the counterattack. And you watch the film from that United match, they scored 4 goals on beautifully executed counterattacks, just clinical countering. And you can't do that if you don't press up too high against them. You play the waiting game, and Leicester are the epitome of beatable. 1 point in their last six matches, and I see that being 1 point in their last seven after they lose 2-1 to Gus's gang.
Bertie, where do you see this one going? What's your scoreline?
Oh, I think this is going to be an ugly affair. I mean, this is two teams that are, as Nate said, especially with Sunderland, they're just a very dysfunctional team. They're up and down like a horse draws. You know, I mean, Leicester, yes, they've only drawn one game in their last six games. But I actually think this break is actually good for Leicester, because I'm not sure about you guys, but I don't think there are actually many players who play for Leicester that actually play for their country. So I think they're going to be refreshed. I think Pearson's going to be pissed off with the last few results, because they came fairly close in the last couple of games. So my gut says Leicester for 3 points, but only just.
Your gut says like 38 inches with a big, big spare tire hanging around it.
Guzzle, guzzle.
Stat, what do you say?
Well, I can tell you one Leicester player who plays for his country, the Algerian, Riyad Mahrez, who actually scored this past weekend against Ethiopia in a African Cup of Nations qualifier, but mystifyingly enough, he doesn't play for his club anymore. I mean, I don't know why he can't find his way into the lineup for this team, but I actually see Leicester getting a point here. I agree with Nate. Sutherland's been better. The introduction of Pantelimons helped because Manone was killing them before. Stephen Fletcher has been playing better, knocking in some goals of late. But still, I don't trust that team away from home. I think this one's a draw.
Yeah, I'd get the Valium out for this one. I'm going for a 0-0.
Stat, do they let you, as an employee of Fox, they let you watch African Cup of Nations qualifiers on BN Sports? I thought you weren't allowed to do that.
No, absolutely. Phil Shane is my hero. I'm an avid BN.
The best part about working for Fox was watching football all day long. No two ways about it. Stoke versus Burnley. Two teams that really could do with 3 points right about now. Stoke a little inconsistent, putting in one good performance with a couple of bad ones. Burnley finally getting that first victory. And maybe Statman might be getting a little bit nervous after saying that they would not match Derby County's record point low of, was it 12 points?
11 points. And no, I actually said that they would surpass that. I went through their fixtures, and I think there's 5 points in there somewhere. So I think that record is safe.
So how much time do we want to spend on this? Oh, yeah, that's right. Stoke 1, Burnley 0. Bertie?
Yeah, no, I think you're right, actually. I mean, this game, this is a big snooze fest written all over it. I mean, Stoke are a different team this year. They're a much more creative team. With the likes of Diouf and Bojan and Walters and Moses, and I think that's just going to be a hell of a lot too much for Burnley in this game. I mean, they were fortunate to win against Hull, but those games happen. I mean, Hull are not playing well right now, but I think this will be an enjoyable game. I think there'll be a few goals in it, but I think Stoke are going to walk this one. The other interesting thing is after this game, Stoke has some tough games coming up against Liverpool, Arsenal, and the mighty Manchester United. But I think this is probably 2-0 to Stoke.
Nate Aburea.
Stoke City 4, Burnley 0. Bojan with 2, Moses with 2. Stoke are going to run riot, and they're going to play attractive football against the minnows of the league. But how's this? Burnley are not going to lose any ground down in this what is developing into a very compelling relegation fight. Because I see Villa losing. I see Palace losing. I see Leicester losing. And I see QPR losing. I see all 5 of the bottom 5 not picking up a single point. So you lose 4-0, and I guess no harm, no foul for Burnley.
Nate, if you're going to do Stoke 4, you need to go Stoke 4, Burnley 0.
Nil.
And just trick him, because who was the guy that used to do it, Bertie? I mean, he did it for years, and you could
tell. That's why I was trying to, I wanted.
You could tell the inclination, yeah. Stoke 2, Burnley 1.
Yeah, there's a lady doing it now, she's very, very good at it. Good stuff.
Good stuff. Newcastle versus QPR, the Flying Magpies. Oh, do you like that? The Flying Magpies. I tell you can only bust that out if you're very, very good at your job. The Flying Magpies won 5 on the bounce, taking on Joey Barton's QPR as Joey returns to Geordie Town, Geordie Land. QPR going through a rough old time of it. This one, you would have said a month ago, would have been tight. Right now, you've got to say, nailed on 3 points for Newcastle, Stat.
By the way, you never got a Stoke-Burnley prediction out of me. I'm going to go with 3-0 Stoke.
I'm going to go 2-0 Stoke.
But no, on this one, I disagree with you, Nick. I think QPR has been trending in the right direction. They took some points off
trending?
City last time.
Are you bloody Twitter now?
They have Leicester and Burnley at home coming up, so I think Harry might get some points here and maybe get out of that drop zone. But no, not this week. I mean, I love the way Newcastle's playing. You know, they've won four in a row in the league. Last time they won five was March/April of 2012. They had a streak of six in a row, and Papa Cisse scored in all six of those matches. And this Ayoze Perez is on a similar run. He scored in their last three. I think he gets another one here, and Newcastle pick up another victory.
Bertie, Ari Redknapp, when is the magic going to kick in? Or do you think maybe this could be Harry's last season in the big time? I mean, he's threatened it before. You know, obviously with QPR in the top flight, he couldn't resist one more go around. But is the game passing dear old Ari by?
Yeah, this is a tired man now. He's definitely outstaying his welcome on this one. But I agree with David on this one, is that QPR, I think they are playing very well lately. I mean, the last four games, they've been unlucky. They probably could have possibly got 3 points against Man City. But they're definitely approaching the games in the right way. The advantage that they have over Newcastle this weekend is Steven Taylor and Colaccini are both out. And I believe the Algerian midfielder is also out. Abidi, is it? Abid? Who broke his toes. So I actually think that Queen's Park Rangers are going to squeeze a draw out of this one. I think momentum is with them. Newcastle have the momentum, but I think it's going to be one of these games. It's going to be end-to-end stuff. But I think Queen's Park Rangers are going to sneak a draw out of this one.
And would you care to offer a scoreline on this particular game, or will you just...
No, I'll let you figure that out for yourself. 2-2? Maybe 2-2?
Not vague enough. Nate, come on, what's your scoreline?
Well, Newcastle, you look at this win streak for them, and I love it. You go back, it started October 18th at home to Leicester. They won 1-0. They won on the road 8 days later to Spurs, to the most dysfunctional squad in all the land, and they beat them 2-1. They went home against another incredibly dysfunctional, just in shambles squad on November 1st, and they played Liverpool, and they beat them 1-0 in my humble opinion, the most dreadfully played match. And I'm not just saying that as a Liverpool fan. That game on November 1st was one of the ugliest, least entertaining matches of this entire Premier League season. And Newcastle, you know what they got out of it? 3 points, 1-0 to the Barcodes. They then went to West Brom and won 2-0. The point I'm getting at is this hasn't been, they haven't been blowing everybody out of the water. They're winning one goal score lines. They're winning 1-0. They're winning 2-1. And I see them winning 2-1 again in this match against QPR. From an entertainment standpoint, there are two must-sees going into this from a QPR standpoint, or just even from a neutral standpoint, speaking about QPR, and that is Charlie Austin, first off, and what Charlie Austin has displayed over the last couple of weeks, and I talked about it on the last show, is that he did it at Chelsea and at home to Man City in games that really had an international spotlight, so to speak, on them, where there were people all around the world, I mean, obviously all around England, so focused in on especially that Man City game, where it was the primetime game, the 9:30 game here in America, the late game over in England. And Charlie Austin on these big stages against Chelsea and Man City has scored some sublime goals. He's been a leader out there. He has audacity that not a lot of people have. And it's going to be interesting to see him go from facing Chelsea and Man City, where it seemed like, God, this guy really steps up to the plate when the competition rises. And now let's see what he does at Newcastle against what is still, for all intents and purposes, a middle of the road Premier League team. I think Charlie Austin gets a goal. QPR, however, are going to lose 2-1 to Newcastle. And my goodness, does it ever get old watching Joseph Barton, that neo-Nazi Chihuahua pit bull, going back up north and playing against his former club? I have a feeling that somebody is going to wind that little Chihuahua pit bull up, and I think he might get sent off.
Yeah, Stat, I was going to say, how many times has Joey Barton been sent off in his career? I do recall a couple of feisty scraps when he was back in his Newcastle days.
I don't have that one top of my head, but I can get it to you before the end of this podcast. That's my vow to you.
And your prediction for this game?
I am going to go another boring 1-0 Newcastle win, which will have Nate making the same argument next week about the fact that their winning streak is...
Yes, I'm going to have to agree with the stat man here. Newcastle squeaking this one out. And don't forget, if you love the show, subscribe via Stitcher, TuneIn, and iTunes. And if you want to send us a tweet, well, you can, @WorldSoccerTalk, #WST pod, and I will be reading some of your tweets out a little later when we discuss Liverpool and Tottenham. But before we get to Liverpool and Tottenham, we've got a little matter of Arsenal versus Manchester United. Once the fixture that used to define the Premier League season, now a fixture that may define who will finish fourth in the Barclays Premier League. Arsenal really need to come back after that rather pitiful display against Swansea. Meanwhile, Manchester United with a 1-0 squeaker over Crystal Palace definitely needed that kind of victory. This one, ordinarily a big game. I think this fixture now, an even bigger game because the stakes are just so high. And when we look at the amount of players that have been on international duty, I'll go to stat first of all. Which team got hammered the most by these stupid qualifiers and friendlies, Arsenal or United?
It was clearly United. This is the rare instance where Arsenal faced a team that's more beat up than they are. I mean, this international break was a disaster for Louis van Gaal. Looks like De Gea, Carrick, Daley Blind, and possibly even Di Maria could miss this match as a result of injuries picked up during this international break. So he's going to have all sorts of problems putting together a back line. Certainly they've already had issues with Phil Jones and Johnny Evans and Rojo injuries recently. So, that being said, I still think United go in there and get a point. I mean, Arsenal was the one big club that somehow figured out a way to not beat Manchester United last season. They drew 0-0 at the Emirates and lost 1-0 at Old Trafford to a Van Persie goal. So I don't trust Arsenal in these situations. I know Sanchez and Welbeck have been great, but I see a 1-1 draw here.
Nate Aburea, one of the chants that the Man United fans have labeled at Arsene Wenger is rather a rude one. Will we be hearing it at the Emirates? Or, I mean, there's more chance of hearing sit down, you pedophile at the Emirates than there is at Old Trafford, right? Because Emirates is rather quiet these days.
Yeah, but as far as the managers here in this huge fourth place contest, as I actually called this about a couple months ago, saying that I knew it, Arsenal and Man United were going to be competing for fourth place this year, and we're seeing it develop here in late November, and I think this is going to carry on, and it's going to add a new flavor, a new chapter to the rivalry that I've told all of you guys that really instilled a passion for English football in my heart and brain growing up, Arsenal-Man United, and it's almost more entertaining this year. The odds of one of them missing out on Europe and the other one finishing one place above them, but everyone's so sick of Wenger, and Arsene Wenger, just the whipping boy of every pundit, every fan, whether Arsenal or otherwise, United, whoever you support, everyone just loves whipping on Arsene Wenger. I am so sick of Louis van Gaal. I mean, at this point last year, and I know I've got a soft spot for David Moyes, who has now managed in the last few seasons, he's managed a Scouts club and a Basque club, so now I have even more reason to have much love for David Moyes. But at this point last year, David Moyes had more points, he had more wins, and he'd spent about £100 million less than LVG had. Oh, and by the way, Man United were also busy advancing to the knockout stage of this thing called the Champions League. But God, he was just, you know, the worst manager in club history. How dare he try to run the reins of such a big club that he had no business being in charge of? I mean, Louis van Gaal has been getting just so much slack shown to him this year by these just ridiculously brain-dead United supporters who are the biggest hypocrites on planet Earth when it comes to their managerial situation. Because David Moyes, I know this might sound like, you know, just beating the same dead horse, but David Moyes was so hard done. When you see just the facts, when you see facts like that of where they were last year to where they are this year, it's not far off. And in fact, they're doing less this year than they did last year in that horrible display from David Moyes. I'm calling old school victory for the Gunners. I'm talking 1972 Arsenal back in the Highbury days when they played midweek day games because of union strikes with the electricity. 1-0 to the Arsenal. Alexis Sanchez in the 85th minute. Man United hit the post not once, not twice, but three times and lose 1-0 to the Gunners at the Emirates. Have it.
Love it. Love it. 1-0 to the Arsenal.
To the Arsenal. 1-0
to the Arsenal. Bertie, Arsenal have not beaten a top four club in how long, Statman?
Well, remember, United last season were not a top four club, so they don't even fall under that.
I know, but let's just say Man United are a top four club. When was the last time Arsenal beat a top four club? Because I know it's one of the big things that's thrown out there again and again about...
Nah, they struggled last year. They did beat Liverpool at home, as I'm sure Nate recalls.
That's 2-0 back November. Hey, take it. Last year they were 2-0. It was 2-0 back in, I think, November 2nd of 2013 at the Emirates.
Outstanding, because Zorlan Ramsey with the goals.
Well, but you just think, I had my moment. You one-upped me. Thanks, buddy.
That's about it in the last couple of years. You're going to Bertie on this?
Yeah. Bertie, do Arsenal beat Manchester United and claim a top four, a very rare top four scalp?
Yeah, I think they do on this one, yeah. I mean, you know, the problems that Man United have right now, it's not just the injuries that Statman was going on about, because their whole back line is decimated. You know, the only thing that they've got going for themselves right now is that they have their offensive players. They're all fairly fit. I think they all came back from international duty fine. But the bigger problem for Man United is that, and Nate just addressed this, is that, you know, Van Gaal, I think he's really, really lucky. I mean, I don't know how he's outstaying his welcome on this one, because Moyes did have a better record. He didn't spend as much money. And it just came out of, you know, I think it was yesterday or today, that, you know, the Man United revenue is down 10 million compared to the same time as last year. So I worry for United. In fact, I mean, I don't really...
Don't lie. No one worries for United.
I don't worry, because it's funny, because they're not a big team anymore. So when you say, you know, they haven't beaten the big teams, Man United right now are not in that same conversation as being the big team. So the only result I can see here is, you know, Sanchez scoring a pair and Arsenal winning 2-0.
Love it. Okay, here's one. Tweet about this game. It's from Rodney Mayaya, yeah. Why did Wenger sell Thomas Vermaelen with their obvious defensive frailties? Why did Barker buy a player for that much to bench him? Let's throw that one to Statman.
Well, they haven't benched him. He's been injured this whole season. He just got back to full training, so we'll probably see him play here soon for them. But on the Arsenal side of it, it was puzzling, because Wenger made a big point when he signed Callum Chambers of saying he wanted to play him as a holding midfielder, but he hasn't had that luxury because they're so short of options at the back. So, you know, if he was going to do that, then he should have gone and signed another defender. Once again, Wenger mystifying in the transfer market. I agree. Moyes, by the way, before we move on, now at Real Sociedad, has a big challenge there. They're in the relegation zone, but does get to manage one of my favorite players, former Arsenal...
Carlos Vela.
Carlos Vela.
Yeah.
Viva los Vascos. Come on, Sociedad. Love it.
So we were talking about big clubs, so it's a perfect segue to our next fixture, as the mighty Crystal Palace taking on the lowly Liverpool. And before we get to Nate, we have quite a few tweets regarding Liverpool, so I'm going to rattle through them, and then we'll take it to Nate, because his beloved Liverpool just 4 points off a Champions League
spot. Stop it.
Okay, at Merseyside Magic, time to question BR's tactics, or in Brendan we trust. Your thoughts. Danny Satuan at SOEM_Danny. Start to believe Fabio Barini in the front and Torre in the back, Balotelli and Lovren in the bench. And this one from Patrick Phillips @CaptPat48. It's not BR's tactics, it's no Luis. He drew so much attention that he made all those around him better than they are. So we'll now send it to Nate Aburrea. Crystal Palace versus Liverpool. Now, if I'm not mistaken, this fixture last year, what happened? What happened in Palace? There was... It's kind of foggy in my memory, but
didn't Liverpool
blow the title in this game?
You know what? I have no problem with anything that you just did there trying to provoke me, as long as you don't use that terminology, Cristanbul, because I will go medieval on your ass if you drop a Cristanbul on this podcast. Please, I'm just begging you, please don't do it. Not only is it no Luis, it's no Sturridge. 101 goal total, historic output of just offensive, just beauty for an entire season last year when they had their opportunity to win the title. And it was this strike partnership that was literally historic in its level of quality. And not only is it no Louis, you got no Sturridge. And this Daniel Sturridge fiasco is just breaking my heart. And it's going down the road of so many different players where you just start to wonder, God, he's sort of made of glass. And that's what kills you then going back to last year in that, wow, Daniel Sturridge had darn near a fully healthy season. Luis Suarez had a fully incident-free season after he got back from his suspension. I mean, the cards were just – the stars were aligned. The cards were in the deck, whatever you want to say. Liverpool blew it last year. That's all there is to it. Daniel Sturridge not being there, I think, is not getting nearly enough attention because everyone wants to focus on the sale of Luis Suarez. I think being without Sturridge, we saw what Balotelli could do when Sturridge was on the field and being able to actually develop a partnership. I mean, it's just horrible. It's horrible luck what's happened to them. But Brendan Rodgers also has to take some blame as well, because I've talked about this so much. He had a responsibility knowing what he was going to be without, and then double once Sturridge went down to go, well, we might not be able to play this little tiki-taka crap anymore. We might actually have to get tough, get hard-nosed, get old-school 1980s Liverpool on this league if we're to have any chance of, forget the title, if we're to have any chance of finishing in the top four in this league, which, hey, call me optimistic, call me crazy. That's not out of the question at this point. There's 27 matches left in this season. And the last time that Liverpool took 3 points in this Premier League season, it was over a month ago in a small London stadium against a dismal bottom five slumping opponent in QPR. Well, there you go, Brendan. It all came full circle. Get back on the good right here. I'm calling 3-2, the same scoreline that they beat QPR with every stroke of own goal luck back in that match a month ago. Liverpool win 3-2. And how you like these scores? I'm laying it all on the line. Henderson gets the first, one for Jordy. Balotelli with his first Premier League goal for Liverpool. And you know who gets the third on a corner rising up for the eventual winner is everyone's favorite, Lovren.
I would say that Nate has been staring into his crystal ball on
that
one.
Well done.
I like the way I avoided that one. Bertie, little question for you. How much money would you pay if you knew that you were going to see another 3-3 thriller?
Lots. But I'd like to just say something about something Nate just said then. You know, the thing is, Balotelli is injured right now. So the idea of him scoring is a very, very weird scenario.
Oh, well, yeah.
Because he got injured on Italian duty. I actually think the best thing right now, and I know I'm not answering your question here, Nick, that Balotelli is
not...
You
never do, Bertie. You never
he's not. He's not in the mix right now. And I think that can only help Liverpool. You know, Liverpool just need to get their mojo back. I don't think they're having too
what,
much.
You bloody Austin Powers now.
Things are gonna look a little brighter for Liverpool. I do see Liverpool winning this game, but more interesting than that are the rumours that are coming out of Italy that Rafa may be the man taking over Rodgers. And I think that's the biggest thing right now. But there's lots of drama with Liverpool right now. This is a dysfunctional team. When Nate talks about dysfunction with Newcastle, this is the most dysfunctional team. But I think they're going to get it right. I really do think that Liverpool are going to turn around. It can't get any worse for Liverpool right now. But I think Balotelli out of that media mix is going to help them a lot.
Let me rephrase my prediction. It's going to be this incredible three-goal display from Henderson, Lovren, and Ricky Lambert. Yeah, there you go. The big lumbering beat factory worker is going to get the winner. I'm calling it. There you go. Yeah,
Lambert's going to score the winner for Liverpool this weekend.
It's a Sunday game. Obviously, some of the Liverpool internationals get that extra day off. Palace, any chance of the upset?
Now, I probably should have mentioned this earlier, but the latest is Balotelli will be available, which is a bad break for Liverpool. But
then it's going to be Henderson, Balotelli, and Lovren. I'm going back to my original prediction. There we go.
As my boss at work would say, Balotelli's not playing. It's a key loss.
Shit.
You like that one? A key loss?
That's
nevertheless.
Think about it.
Nevertheless, Palace have been terrible of late, only 1 point in the last five matches. So I agree with Nate and Bertie. I think you can't lose them all. So I think Liverpool do figure out a way to win this one. And on the Rafa thing, he was in trouble at Napoli a couple weeks ago, but they've played better. They've beaten Roma and Fiorentina in their last two. They're up to third in the table there. So I don't see that happening anytime soon, maybe at the end of the season. But he seems fine there for now.
I see Fernando Torres coming back to Liverpool before Rafa Benitez comes back to Liverpool.
It just goes to show what a mess Liverpool are in that Rafa Benitez's name is being mentioned in the same breath. 2-0
Rafa Benitez.
Liverpool. Hull versus Tottenham. We've got a tweet from @Spurs_US. In 19 games this season, and Statman will just be, he'll be getting goosebumps over this one. In 19 games this season, Spurs have played the same starting 11 just three times. They are 2-2-2. Hull going through a little bit of a sticky patch. Tottenham just completely all over the shop. What I would love to see in this one is Tommy Huddlestone banging in a couple of long-range bazookas to really stick it to Tottenham so they fire Pochettino and just keep their track record going of having no patience whatsoever with any of their coaches. The bookies make this one pretty much a dead heat, which goes to show you just how poor Tottenham are right now. Bertie boy, Hull, Tottenham, how doth you seeth this game?
This is okay. So this is two more dysfunctional teams. I mean, Hull in their last six games have won what, just once, and Spurs probably, you know, not much better than that. But I mean, there's something very wrong going at the Lane right now. I mean, under Levy and Baldini, the problems just seem to get worse. I mean, I don't think it's necessarily the players are the problem, and I don't think it's necessarily the manager is the problem. I think everything else that's going on in the background is really the bigger problem. I mean, as far as players are concerned, Saldado, he hasn't done the business. Adebayor, for coming out and calling out the fans the other day, I think he's a lazy player. I mean, and you look at the buy that they bought. I think they bought like one or two players. Ben Davis hasn't even started a single game for Spurs. And you look at their back line, Cabal, the captain of the team, he's an absolute joke. I mean, you know, I mean, Rose has had his form dip. Dyer didn't want to play for the under-21s, which I can respect because he actually wants to, he says he wants to play more time for Spurs and get more playing time. The only player that's really done it for them is Chadley. But, I mean, these are worrying times for Pochettino. I think my money is on Hull winning this game by 1-0. They lost to Burnley the week before the international break, which was an absolute disgrace. But Hull seem to be drawing games that they should be winning. And you've seen that from the beginning of the season. But, yeah, my money is on Hull 1-0.
Statman, should Hull win this game? I mean, Spurs are then officially in free fall. And we've seen that Daniel Levy has just no patience whatsoever. Where do Tottenham Hotspur go if they lose this game? Because, you know, Hull will leapfrog them in the table, probably on goal difference. Tottenham will fall down into the high teens. I mean, where is this team going to go?
Well, where they should have gone for a manager this summer was Frank de Boer. I know that was a rumor, and then there's some question about whether they actually approached him or not. But to me, that would have been a fantastic hire. I'm a big de Boer fan. I think he's sooner or later going to leave Ajax. I think he's accomplished everything he can accomplish there and make a move to the Premier League. But no, they went with Pochettino instead. And what I'm hearing is the players absolutely can't stand him. It's just a terrible atmosphere at that club right now. And yeah, I think I described their squad as last time as being a mishmash. And I think your stats regarding how many different lineups they've run out there, I think, back that up. I mean, Pochettino has no idea what his best team is right now. The good news for them is Hull have been a mess, too. I mean, they did get those draws at the Emirates and Anfield, but then they followed that up with losses to Southampton and Burnley. So they're not playing well either. So I see a draw in this one.
I'm going to go for a Hull 1-0 victory and more woe for Mauricio Pochettino.
Nobody with any hope for Spurs here? Really? I haven't gotten to my prediction yet. I don't know.
Go on then. Lay it on us, Nate.
Well, real quickly, a quick backstory. Actually, you said Tom Huddlestone there, who actually, of course, is a former Tottenham player. And you talk about him hitting long bombs in with his right foot. I actually watched Tom Huddlestone at Tottenham practice in Santa Clara, California, before they were getting ready to play the San Jose Earthquakes back in 2010, a day where I got to interview Gareth Bale, Ari Redknapp, Robbie Keane. And Tom Huddlestone ended up throwing a football with Alex Smith, who was then the San Francisco 49ers quarterback. He threw a pigskin, and he threw it farther than Alex Smith could. And Al quickly said, I can't let cameras see this. This guy who doesn't even play the game is outdoing me. So Tom Huddlestone is an incredible athlete. I just want to throw that out there, that I watched the man throw an American pigskin 60 yards. That was quite impressive. In regards to this game, Tottenham are a better team on the road, because you get away from that toxic, delusionally entitled fan base that wants to whistle at their own players and boo mercilessly year after year after year because something is going to be so different when another manager comes in. Pochettino is a different character when he's on the road. I swear to God, he's calmer, he's wiser, he's a better manager. I see Tottenham getting out of this with a 1-0 victory. I don't see them, and then they'll lose the next week, and the next time they're going to have a chance to win one or get a good result will be on the road. The only time that I will ever have any faith in this Tottenham team is when they're not playing at home. I know they landed the 1-0 against Southampton back a month and a half or so ago at home. I think that was just Southampton having an off day. But you look at the 1-1 at the Emirates. You look at even the stroke of luck against Villa a couple weeks ago. Tottenham on the road, I feel like, are an entirely different team because they don't have to deal with those ridiculously awful fans of theirs at the Lane. I see Tottenham winning 1-0.
Well, the next time they're on the road, Chelsea, midweek. Thank you very much. Game over. Villa versus Southampton, the darlings of the Premiership. Super Southampton, managed by Mr. Ronald Koeman, a Dutchman who may have been in the frame for the Tottenham job. Aston Villa, well, they've got their hands full because they're just all over the shop, finally getting on the score sheet again, but can't help but start with Roy Keane and his little scuffle with somebody during the Republic of Ireland, Scotland pre-match festivities. Obviously, Keane finding it very hard to keep quiet these days. Who can see this one other than a resounding win for the Super Saints? Nate Aborea.
I hate to immediately do this, but I see 2-1 to Southampton, and not only is it going to be 2-1 to Southampton, remember that Spurs match that is referenced there a few moments ago where Spurs just escaped Villa Park with the most smash and grab lucky red card and then a deflected free kick for a winner in the 89th minute. It's going to be something eerily similar to that, because Aston Villa, just we talk so much about the psychological game on this show, and with a team like Newcastle who just, they keep winning one goal affairs, they keep winning 1-0, they keep winning 2-1, and it just, God, luck is on their side. It's the polar opposite of that. It is truly the antithesis of that with this Aston Villa team. I see them losing 2-1. I see maybe Pella getting, it's gonna be a deflected winner. It's gonna be an ugly own goal. It's gonna be something that hits off the crossbar and the post and off the back of someone's calf and goes in, because Villa have the footballing gods for some reason just hating them right now, and I don't see them getting out with anything at all.
Bertie, make it quick.
Villa. No, they're not scoring goals. I don't know what Nate's talking about when he says they're going to win 2-1, or rather they're going to score a goal, because they've only scored 2 goals in the last 8 games. This is a real worry for Villa. You know, I mean, yeah, the Saints will probably win, you know, 2-0, 1-0, something like that. But the interesting thing about Southampton, and I'm not going to be quick here, is that they'll be talking about Champions League. Are they going to stay in this spot or whatever? I really do think that there's a really good chance the way that this whole momentum with the Saints right now is going to go. Their only problem is the next few games, Man City, Arsenal and Man United, the mighty Man United. But I think the Saints can squeeze a few points out of those other teams. But Nate, I don't know what you're talking about. Villa scoring a goal. That's a joke.
Statman, wrap this one up for us.
Christian Eriksen, October 5th, the last goal Southampton conceded in the Premier League. They've kept 4 straight clean sheets. Bertie mentioned Villa's trouble scoring, so I think the Saints keep marching on in this one. I'll pick 1-0 on a Pella goal.
Yes,
2-1, Villa get a goal.
K, Come on, Southampton. They are going to take care of business. And talking of business, got to wrap this one up. Don't forget, draft11.com, the daily fantasy sports game. You can create a team. There's cash prizes. It's completely legal to play if you live in the US. And a special offer to World Soccer Talk podcast listeners. You can compete in next weekend's Premier League matches against me, the gaffer, Christopher Harris, as well as Kartik Karashnaya. And I've just received this email. This is hot off the presses. The listeners who finish with the five top scores will each receive $25. That's right, $25. Just go to draft11.com between now and November 29. Register for free and then enter the game labeled World Soccer Talk League. Boys, I want to thank you for this special World Soccer Talk preview of the Barclays Premier League coming up for this weekend. Make sure to come back next weekend and listen to me slaughter the boys for their absolutely lame-o predictions. And don't forget to tweet us at World Soccer Talk, hashtag WSTPod. For, who am I saying? That's right, it slipped me. For David Mossy, for Nate Aburea and Robin Burt, I am Nick Webster, and we'll see you all next weekend.
Come on, you Irons.
Bye for now.